All right, guys, I'd like to welcome everybody to our fourth quarter market update conference call. It's only been a couple of months since we held our last call. That was the unplanned call that was done on August the 8th, Monday after the S&P downgraded U.S. debt market. What I wanted to talk about today was really just kind of a general overview of things in the market and the economy. As many of you know, we do one of these types of meetings in person in January, and we held a call back in April similar to this. So we're trying to do this about every 3 months or so. We held our mid-year market update in July. That was done via a webinar. And now this is going to be our final one for the year in October, barring anything extreme that happens that will warrant another call to be done before the end of the year, similar to what we did on August the 8th due to the S&P downgrade. Again, this call is being recorded. If anybody wants to go back and listen to it afterwards, it will be on our website. Usually takes roughly 48 hours or so to get there. If you know people that you think would find value with this call or this information or the services we provide, feel free to pass this information along to them. Well, let's go ahead and get started. We'll just do a general review of things. And for right now, once again, we continue to deal with a very complex market and somewhat unstable market conditions. Just a couple of months ago when I held this call, there was a tremendous amount of fear in the marketplace. We spent about a half an hour or so on the phone with that call, and of course I've spoken with virtually all of you since then one-on-one. A couple of weeks ago, there were similar fears going on out there in the marketplace, and now all of a sudden you kind of blink an eye, and for the past 7 to 8 trading days, the market has been rallying quite significantly, and you just get a general sense that some of the fear has subsided. And that's normal because investing can be so emotional. So one day we feel as though, oh my goodness, you know, we're in real trouble here. We got to take action. And then the next day it's, wow, everything looks kind of good. Maybe we need to get more aggressive. The markets do, though, continue to be very volatile. Since the high that the market reached back in May, the market is down roughly 13%, and it's really been a roller coaster ever since then. We can't turn on the radio or the TV without hearing about Europe and our own fears of recession here in the U.S. Europe has really taken the headlines, though, over the past couple of weeks. Many of you may not be aware that the yields on Greek bonds, their one-year bond, their yields right now are at roughly 140% for a one-year bond. So that basically means they are pricing in default. Europe is absolutely dominating the headlines right now, and they have been for the past couple of weeks, and I think by and large the reason why we're seeing the market rally over the past week or so is on optimism about a further European bailout. Just a couple of weeks ago, Dexia, a Belgian-French financial institution, basically declared bankruptcy, that they were going to fail, and they are in the process of being bailed out right now to the tunes of billions and billions of euros. When that came out a couple of weeks ago, of course, that stoked a lot of fear into the marketplace. That was right at the time at the end of September where the markets were certainly very shaky. And as we see things unfold right now, we really just have to hope that this is not the start of something more severe in Europe like what occurred here in the States when Bear Stearns failed. If you remember, Bear Stearns got saved. They are going to be saving Dexia. And all of the regulators and government officials came out and says, hey, guys, you know, let's not worry. Let's not panic. We have this under control. This won't be a systemic problem. Well, of course, we had learned roughly 6 to 7 months after the Bear Stearns collapse that it really was quite a significant event that had occurred and what had transpired over the following 6 to 7 months. The Europeans are doing everything they can to get this problem under control. They created the EFSF, the European Financial Security Fund, a while ago, which is funded with about 440 billion euros to really provide capital to financial institutions. And they're in the process of right now of trying to get approval to increase that fund. And basically, to me, what that means is they see the real possibility of big problems happening in Europe, and 400 and some odd billion euros just won't be enough to bail out a lot of these institutions. I think we saw a lot of optimism on Monday when the French and German leaders came out and said, hey, look, we are going to have some kind of solution to this problem, and we're going to announce our plan in the beginning of November. To me, it sounds like a little bit more can kicking, but that's been going on now for the better part of 3 years. This is not a problem that will go away easily, just like the problems that we have will not go away easily, and it's hard to see how issuing more debt will solve a debt problem. But nevertheless, the market has reacted positively to this news, just like they have historically reacted positively to the news in the United States every time we come out with some type of bailout, whether it was TARP or stimulus or quantitative easing from the Fed. This is really no different. So there has been a lot more optimism in the markets over the past week or so as a result of some type of an announcement for a really grand type of a bailout. One of the topics, as I mentioned on our last call on August the 8th, was the S&P downgrade. And oddly enough, and I mentioned this on the call, actually, from 2 months ago, that bonds were rallying as a result of that. And that was very counterintuitive. Everybody thought, my goodness, we're going to get a downgrade. Bonds are probably going to sell off. Well, the exact opposite happened, and the exact opposite continued to happen. In fact, between our last call and now, the 10-year bond actually got well below 2%. Bonds have been getting hit rather hard over the past week or so. The 10-year bond is now back above 2%. It's right now at about 2.21. Who would ever have thought that we'd be having a conversation saying, wow, bonds are really getting hit, and the yield is all the way up to 2.21%. It was only about a year and a half ago where all the talk was the 10-year bond could be at 4 to 4.5%. So for right now, the bond market is showing some weakness, and that really has more to do with the equity market having strength. People are selling out of bonds a little bit and going more into equities. Again, this has only been over the past week or so, but bond yields are dramatically lower from where they were many months ago. Is the bond market trying to tell us that we are going into recession? That's a question mark. We'll talk more about that in just a moment. Also, oddly enough, since our August the 8th call on the S&P downgrade, believe it or not, gold and silver are still down on a percentage basis since the downgrade. Now, they're up a little bit today, but they are still slightly down since that downgrade. Again, somewhat counterintuitive to what we thought would happen. Right now, the debate about deficits have really subsided, and that's really, I think, mostly because Europe is on the forefront. But I do think that this debate and conversation will reemerge again in the coming weeks. November 23rd is the deadline for the 12-member super committee to vote on a 10-year deficit reduction goal of $1.5 trillion. The proposals must pass a simple majority in order to move forward to the House and Senate for consideration. So I think as that deadline gets closer, we'll probably be hearing more and more about that in the news. And, of course, we'll see if Congress was listening to S&P from their downgrade in August. And as I've been saying for really the better part of 2 years here, there will be no pain-free solutions to the problems that we have that took many, many years to get into. It will take many years to get out of, but I am still confident that we will eventually find our way out of this problem. And, of course, we at Sard Wealth will continue to keep you updated on any relevant changes that take place. So whatever it is that they end up deciding on, we will be sure to communicate that information to you along with our thoughts and opinions on that. So far for the year, we've had rising commodity prices, primarily food and energy. Then we had falling commodity prices, and now over the past couple of weeks, we've been having rising food and energy prices yet again. One of the reasons why the government releases inflation numbers that include and exclude food and energy is because they are so volatile, and it can really have dramatic short-term movements. But for right now, commodities have gone back up in price. And I think that that is partially due to the stronger dollar that we've seen in the market over the past few weeks. Why have we seen a stronger dollar over the past several weeks? There's been a flight to quality. And a lot of the fear over Europe was to the forefront several weeks ago. People were still flying to the safe haven of the U.S. dollar, and commodities are priced in dollars. Let's talk about recession in the United States. This has been a topic of discussion now for well over a year. I can't remember the last time I have seen and heard so many well-respected firms, people, and institutions be at such odds about what their thoughts are on whether or not we will enter a recession. The Economic Cycle Research Institute is a very, very well-respected private company that is hired by many, many well-known institutions to help give them economic data. Their owner announced 2 weeks ago, and he said, quote, "This is a done deal. We are going into recession. This is based on dozens of indicators for the United States. There is a contagion among those forward-looking indicators that we only see at the onset of a business cycle recession." These are some pretty strong words. He's really putting his company's reputation on the line, because if he's wrong, he's really going to lose a lot of credibility. They have gone back and tracked recessions now for decades, and they really, really do a terrific job of getting it right. They very rarely come out and make an announcement like this. Last year, in the summer of last year, many of you remember there was a great fear about going into a double-dip recession. Well, many of the indicators that are published by the ECRI, which is their abbreviation, were really pointing to a double-dip. I mean, they were really pointing to a double-dip, but they never came out and formally announced that we would actually enter a double-dip. Of course, if it was that easy, if you could just follow a few indicators to determine if we were going into recession, everybody would be following. It's certainly still more of an art than a science, but even last year, when their indicators were somewhat pointing to it, they never came out and made the bold announcement that we were, in fact, going to double-dip. But they did 2 weeks ago, and we, at least from my chair, have to take that very, very seriously. John Hussman, another very well-respected economist and money manager, is really saying the same thing. Many of his data points are also pointing to an oncoming recession. Nouriel Roubini has now been saying the same thing, that a recession over the next quarter or so is inevitable. But what makes this so challenging is you have a whole other set of people and institutions in complete disagreement. You have many, many CEOs, FedEx is an example, saying they just don't see a recession coming. They just don't see it happening. They see dramatically slow growth, but they don't see a recession coming. Warren Buffett has come out and said very, very unlikely that we're going to double dip. I mean, you know, he runs 70 companies. Talk about a person that really knows what's going on out there in the economy is really not seeing that happen. Jeffrey Sout is an investment analyst with a very, very large, well-respected brokerage firm. I listen to what he says because he tells it like it is. Too many people on the brokerage firm side tend to sugarcoat things. They don't want to seem overly negative because, you know, they have an axe to grind. But I listen to what he says because he is a straight shooter and he tells it like it is. And he wrote 2 weeks ago in one of his reports that 14 of the 18 economic reports issued in the previous week came in better than expected. And that trend continued last week with 11 of the 16 releases showing better than estimated results. All of this is inconsistent with an economy entering a recession. That is what Jeffrey Sout wrote just a couple of weeks ago. So we really have these incredibly conflicting reports about whether or not we will enter into recession. Of course, we'll know that answer in hindsight over the next quarter or two, but this is something that we are following very, very closely here. Markets on average, just to let you know, markets on average go down roughly 30% when they go into recession. Now, I know that sounds like a lot, but let's keep in mind here, the market did correct from peak to trough roughly 20%. That had peaked out about 2 weeks ago. Intraday, a week ago Monday, intraday, the market did hit bear market territory. We were down roughly roughly 20%. Might not have felt like it from any of you on the phone because we've been defensively positioned now for the better part of 4 months in many of your portfolios, but that was the reality. And, of course, now over the past 7 days, the market has rallied quite significantly. So recessionary fears are certainly out there, certainly things that we take very, very seriously and are watching on a daily basis. Now, because you have some suggesting that we are absolutely going into recession while you have some suggesting that they just don't see it happening, let's talk about some of the pros and cons that are going out there in the market and in the economy, because I am a big believer that things are never as bad as they seem. And I'm also a big believer that things are usually never as good as they might seem. So we're always trying to keep things in perspective. But let's talk about some of the cons that are out there right now. Front and center, number one, the European debt crisis. And again, this is not just a European problem. We are all interconnected. It is estimated that roughly 50% of the business borrowing that goes on in Asia comes from European banks. So if they have a problem over in Europe, it will spill over to the United States, and it will certainly spill over to Asia, which will impact the entire world. So we must keep a close eye on what's going on in Europe. And for right now, I think in general terms, overall it's a negative. But as we've seen over the last week, as soon as they come out and they start announcing another big bailout package for hundreds and hundreds of billions of euros, the market reacts positively to that. So the market has rallied as a result of that. Another negative is, of course, lowering of GDP. It's no secret that our GDP numbers are very, very low. We just got done talking about the risk of recession. Certainly, it seems as though with all of the news out there, if we did enter recession, I think by all accounts, it would certainly be mild. I've been saying for about the past 6 months, while I've been very, very cautious during that time, at least as of today, I just don't see a repeat of 2008, at least for right now, which is one of the reasons while we've been defensive over the past several months, it's not like we've gone to all cash or to all bonds, because you don't know when the market is going to turn. And once again, I just don't think we're going to have another 08, at least as of right now. But one of the negatives right now is certainly a softening of GDP, and we cannot rule out the possibility of recession. Housing, another weak link. It will probably continue to be a weak link for quite some time. We've talked about housing now for over 2 years. I still think we are going through that bottoming process, but that is a process, and it will take years to work through that process. Many of the jobs that were lost starting in 06, 07 in the housing and construction market, you know, they're not coming back, and they're not coming back anytime soon. So housing is really a very weak link to the overall economy right now because it does play such a large role in our economy. Persistent high unemployment, that is also a negative. We have less people in the workforce, less people buying things, spending money, paying taxes, et cetera. It's a vicious cycle. Government spending cuts in the short term is a negative. Government spending accounts for roughly 35% of our GDP. When you begin to take an axe to government spending, that will have an impact on GDP. At least in the short term, that will be painful. In the long term, it just absolutely has to get done. They have to put a plan in place. We obviously don't have one right now. So those are some of the negatives that are out there right now. But let's talk about some of the positives that are out there, because there are some. Manufacturing continues to expand. It's not expanding quite at the pace that it was just several months ago, which is one of the concerns about the possibility of recession. But nevertheless, manufacturing and industrial production continues to expand. That's a positive. While we still have a weak housing market, construction spending did rise 1.4% to an annual rate of about $800 billion, and that was reported by the Commerce Department. We've had a resilient market. I mean, that's just the reality of things. We've had a resilient market over the past year or so. The market is flat, believe it or not, for the past 12 months, even through that huge uptick that we had after quantitative easing. We don't really have anything to show for that as of today other than higher commodity prices. But as we look back over the past 12 months, we have a flat market. but the market has been quite resilient. Another positive is, look, let's look at corporate profits. I mean, man, companies are making money. At the end of the day, that's what all this boils down to. How are companies doing? Companies, by and large, are doing well. What's interesting is Alcoa missed their number. They disappointed. They were down about 5%, yet the market today is up. Go figure. It's like they're kind of sweeping Alcoa's earnings numbers under the rug. Pepsi announced earnings today, and they beat expectations, and they maintained their outlook, which is a positive. So for right now, corporate profits are strong, and corporate balance sheets have never been stronger. Now, we'll know more over the coming weeks as earnings unfold, but at least as of right now, Alcoa's numbers were not particularly good, but as we can see for today, the market is shaking that off. We'll see what transpires over the next couple of weeks. Now, this one is going to sound like an odd positive, but there continues to be a fair amount of pessimism out there in the marketplace and in the economy. And I've always believed that if you have too many people sitting on the same side of the boat, perhaps it might be time to move over to the other side before it tips over. You know, normally when too many people think the same thing, it usually doesn't occur. It usually doesn't happen. One reason, again, why I don't think we're going to have an 08 again, at least not right now, is we still do have a tremendous amount of pessimism out there. And I think we need to take a contrarian look to that and say, you know what, maybe things aren't quite that bad. Because as I've said repeatedly, the market will do everything it can to prove the greatest number of people wrong at any given time. So with the elevated level of pessimism out there right now, I think that really needs to be looked upon, believe it or not, as a positive. Pessimism for the market, mind you. Pessimism for the market. Another positive, this is more of a short-term positive. Some of the technical indicators that we follow have begun to turn positive in the short term. Unfortunately, our longer-term indicators are still negative. We're continuing to hold our positions in the portfolios, but of course that could change at any time. So where are we going right now? Well, every call I've done here now for roughly the past 2 years, the number one item on this outline has always been deleveraging, and that's not going to change anytime soon. At the end of the day, the problems that we have, the problems that we're trying to work through, all comes back to one thing, credit. We had a credit bust. The debt super cycle that we had been living through for the better part of 30 years has come to an end, and we're going to have to work through that. We're going to be deleveraging, and it's going to take years to work that off. But I am actually quite confident that we will. We will get through that. Unemployment, jobs are at least being created, but unemployment is still just way too high, and we are at a point now where we just cannot afford to have another recession. Policymakers just don't have the tools in their arsenal to try to stimulate the economy out of recession. So we absolutely cannot afford to go into a recession. Again, these are things that we're following on a daily basis. Where are we going with regarding housing? I don't think much has changed on that front. Again, I think this is going to be a long, drawn-out process. I think most of the damage in the housing market has been done. Could we see more downside? Of course. Maybe, 5, 10% in some areas. But I think that the bottoming process has begun, and it will take, again, many, many years to get out of that. As I said repeatedly, we're going to need some short-term pain for long-term gain. And unfortunately, I know so many people have been experiencing economic pain for quite some time now, at least for the past several years. Unemployed people not being able to go out and get a job, underemployed people that are working less hours than they would like, and of course you have the people that have just given up. They're just not looking for work anymore. So you have a published unemployment rate of 9.1%, but you have a real unemployment and underemployment rate of roughly 16.5%. And of course, seniors are getting squeezed as well because we're in an environment now where interest rates are so low that the Fed is basically daring us all to take more risk. So for the conservative investor, the retired investor, it's, hey, I want to put my money in something safe and live off the interest. Well, it's a real challenge because interest rates are so low, but if you step out and you take on a little bit more risk by going into dividend-paying stocks, unfortunately, those investments are not immune to downside risk either. In 2008, many of these stocks were down 40%, something we cannot afford to go through again. So we do need some short-term pain for some long-term gain, and I think we will get there. I really do. So we continue to watch for recession indicators, continue to watch job numbers, obviously continue to watch earnings numbers. Based on forward-looking estimates, and this is some of the information you get on the news and on the television, because you're going to hear people come on and say this market is so incredibly cheap, and you're going to have some people come on and say, well, we think this market is very expensive. Based on forward-looking estimates, the market does look modestly undervalued. But looking at average earnings over the trailing 10 years, the market actually looks a little expensive. What some analysts do when they come on television is they are basing their valuations on forward earnings, what companies are projected to make in the future. Well, what if they're wrong? What if they overestimated? What if we go into recession? And it turns out that their estimates were just way too high. That will have an effect on valuations. Personally, for us right now, I don't see this being an attractively valued market. It's certainly much more attractively valued than it was just a couple of years ago, and we'll continue to look for opportunities to take on more risk in the portfolios to try to achieve a greater reward, but without taking on undue risk. Currently, our investment allocation is defensive. We have made a lot of changes in client portfolios really since the middle of June. Made a couple in June, made a couple in July, and in August, and we continue to be defensive. It was just 2 weeks ago where the fear was really at the forefront once again in the market. I mean, we had a market just a couple of weeks ago that year to date was down 13%. Year to date, and from peak to trough was down roughly 20%. We'll continue to be defensive at least as of today. For many of you on the phone, we're holding about a 25-ish percent allocation to equities. For some of our more aggressive clients, we're at around 40-ish percent. And for some of our really conservative clients, we're all the way down to about 10%. We continue to favor large cap over small cap. We continue to favor U.S. markets over foreign markets. We do have a higher level of cash than we normally would. We normally keep anywhere from 2 to 5% in cash right now. For many of you, we're up at around 15%, which is just unusually high. But I don't want to put the money in places if I don't think there's a good opportunity there. I don't want to invest it just for the sake of investing. And equities up until obviously just a week or so ago was really, really trending downward. And bonds were not looking particularly attractive either at that time to deploy new money. So we were very active for several months in the portfolios. We have not been as active over the past 8 weeks. And really, when you take a step back, we continue to be in this longer-term trading range that we've been in now for the better part of 5 months, between 1,100 on the S&P and 1,220 on the S&P. And we are not right now. We are right now knocking on the door of the upper end of that range. But nevertheless, we continue to be inside that trading range. And as we all know, unfortunately, the market never rings a bell to tell us when to buy or sell or when the high is or when the low is. So we know investing can be very, very emotional. We've had weeks recently where it looked like it made no sense to be investing, and then we had consecutive days where it looked like we were looking up and that we needed to go ahead and get more aggressive. The methodology and the discipline here is advance and protect. We try to get some advancement, and then we get into a situation where if risk is entering the market, we're going to try to protect on the downside. And always remember that there are two kinds of losses when investing, loss of capital and loss of opportunity. But if you protect capital, you'll always have another opportunity for market gains. So for right now, as of today, we're going to continue to hold our defensive posture, That could change at any time. We could deploy more into the equity market if, on a fundamental basis, things begin to show improvement. And on a technical basis, things begin to show improvement. And with that, I'll go ahead and unmute the call and open it up to Q&A. Everybody should be open now. If anybody like to ask me any general questions.
Let's see. This is Joe. You said housing has likely bottomed, but it will still take a number of years. Should I write that on the wall in a magic marker or just...
You can, Joe. Well, no, I don't think the housing market has bottomed. I think the housing market is bottoming. And a bottoming process takes a very, very long time. I mean, just when you're just the equity market to the bond market, you know, those different markets take a long time to go through a bottoming process. The housing market is a different animal. I mean, I think it's a process that takes a few years to go through, but I think the bottoming process in the housing market began about a year or so ago, but I think it's still going to take another couple of years for that process to work its way out. And in the meantime, yeah, we could see more downward pressure on pricing. If we see a spike up in foreclosures, you know, that will put more pressure on housing. I just don't see the demand being there anytime soon for there to be an increase in prices. So I think the bottoming process will take a few years, and then I think we're going to have a lot of years of kind of a flat line, and then perhaps, you know, 8-10 years out or so, we'll be able to hopefully get into a situation where we can actually see some real sustained appreciation in the housing market. But for right now, there's still so much supply out there and just not enough demand. So, yeah, feel free to put that in magic marker. Just don't do it with a Sharpie, Joe.
I was going to say 10 years is still the number I'm using, but for some people that's also a lifetime horizon. So,
yeah. No, I know. I know. Well, but fortunately for housing, you know, housing is not an asset where we're using it for income.
Right.
You know, we don't want it to depreciate, that's for sure, because you always want that in your back pocket if you ever wanted to sell and go ahead and rent and use the equity in your home to live on or do a reverse mortgage. You know, we certainly don't want home prices to depreciate, but it is not an asset that people are using on a day-to-day basis for income purposes.
Right. Right. I understand.
Okay. What other questions do we have? I think we had a fair amount of people on this call. If anybody would like to ask a question, feel free.
Well, if no one comes up with something quick, I'll just ask, I've written down everything you said about the European debt crisis. But do you have anything by way of a magic intuition, not magic, but a SARD intuition about what we're going to, I mean, I've looked at all the cons and the pros, but
yeah, Joe, I really wish I did. I mean, I really do. You know, what's really frustrating and really, really difficult in the environment that we're in today is you don't know what the governments around the world are going to do. You know, you don't know what they're going to do in the end. And, you know, it just seems over the past three years or so, governments have really manipulated the market with all their intervention. So, you know, two months ago, when there was so much bearishness out there and so much fear, and a handful of people saying, my goodness, I just want to cash out and go to cash, you know, we'll come back in at a later day. Well, even during my periods of caution, I'm still never that negative, but I also try not to get that positive when things are looking rosy because, you know, like I said before, things are usually not as bad as they seem. They're never as good as they seem. But even during periods of wanting to get more cautious, you don't know what the government is going to do. So here you could have a situation where maybe you're right. and maybe the economy is going to tank, and maybe earnings are going to go down and we're going to have a sell-off. But you could wake up the next morning and learn that the government is injecting some $1 trillion bailout stimulus type of a plan, and you know what's going to happen? The market's going to respond, and they're going to go up 7 or 8%. And imagine being an investor sitting there in all cash or in all bonds and not being able to participate in that. And the frustration is you don't know when that will come or in what form. All we know is that we've seen it time and time again over the past several years, and every time they announce something, at least something major, the market has reacted positively to it. They're doing it yet again with what they're talking about over in Europe. I mean, Europe has some serious problems. For them to talk about increasing this security fund by as much as they are, yeah, I mean, that just tells you that they have a lot of fear about the liquidity and the solvency of the banks over there. And that's what makes me very nervous. The problems that we have are real. They are out there. They have to be addressed. But it just seems as though there's more can kicking down the road. So my gut, my intuition is, you know, I just fear that the governments are going to continue to kind of band-aid the problems that we have, at least overseas for right now, and it's just masking the underlying problem that is still there and has not been dealt with. And the market will deal with it eventually. We just don't know when it's going to be.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Well, all right, guys. Well, listen, we're going to go ahead and wrap up the call. I hope it was informative and helpful for everybody on the call. We want to, again, thank all of our clients out there for your ongoing trust, your loyalty, your support, your confidence. We spend every day trying to add value for all of you, trying to find ways to increase the value of the portfolios while trying the best we can to minimize the downside risk in the portfolios. It's been a challenging few years. It's been a challenging few months, but that's what we're here for. We're continuing to look out for your best interests, make the right decisions for all of you. Our door is always open, as you know, so any questions, comments, issues, or concerns, please do not hesitate to call our office. We are here for you. Thank you very much again for listening. Take care.
Thank you, John.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Could get the speakerphone on.
It's finished.
Try it now.
It's finished. It's on.
Huh?
It's on.
But nobody's speaking for
it. It's finished. Did you hear anything at all? Did you hear anything?
Very little. But he stopped speaking, then I turned it back on. Give me those books. Give me the hearing aid phone number. The hearing aid. I want to see if I can go see him today.
Doing that.
I was listening to a conference call. See if you can clean this up with a little wiper blade. With a little wiper. Come in, honey.
Sure.
I want you to be near me.
I'm near you. I'm right there next to you.
I can't hear. I'm depressed.
Don't be depressed. You got me here. I love you, dear.
I know. I'm depressed. get the hearing aid on?
I'm trying to clear him, Mr. Bristol.
I think it's in the ear. I think you got some, you got to take a pair of tweezers and see if you can get it out.
Well, I ain't messing with your stuff like that. I'm not going to break it off. Get it out? You gotta push it in, then it pulls out. You don't twist it, you push it in. at the restaurant. Don't break it.
Don't break what?
If you can't pull it out, don't break it.
Huh?
If you cannot pull it out, don't break it. I don't know how you
wash it.
See if you have another box to read.
All of them are the same thing. Do this all over again.
See, this...
They're all the same.
It's supposed to be white on this side, too.
White on both sides?
Yeah.
No, they're all the same. They're all the same, look.
Give me a phone number of the audiology. I'm going to see if I can get it here with him. Is it up here?
No. This is going to wind up on the floor. Would you like to come in no more, Mr. Breslau? The girl don't come here no more? The girl that works in the facility, she don't come here?
I'm looking for the schedule. I think it's on the schedule there. I'd like to just go right into the place. Audiology. Find a phone, give me the phone book, I'll find the phone book.
Is it?